Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldman, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Feldman.
Okay, it's good to see everybody back, and you've had your coffee, and we're ready for another half hour. And for those of you out in TV land, if ever you happen to come through Tulsa on a first Wednesday of the month, hopefully, you can come in and enjoy an afternoon of taping these four programs with us. And again, for those of you out there, we want to thank you for your letters. My, how we enjoy our mail time. And like I've said before, we hardly ever get an unkind letter, and we're grateful for that. We appreciate your prayers. My, when we go on our seminars, we hear it over and over and over that not only do they watch us every day, but they pray for us every day. And I think that's why the Lord has blessed our ministry the way he has. And so we appreciate all that. Now, again, Lyris wants me to remind you, we are starting book 60 on this series of programs, which means that there's 12 programs in each book. This will make 720 half-hour programs. That's a bunch, isn't it? That's quite a library of books. So anyway, the Lord has been just blessing us so abundantly. And as I've rehearsed with people, especially as we travel, that it just seems as though the Lord has reached out to so many men, older men, and not exactly good men. In fact, I was just talking with a gentleman the other day up in Kansas, and I'm not going to identify him, but I imagine a lot of people out there will know who I'm talking about. And he had lost his wife some time ago, and he called me on the phone and shared with me that he had just lost it, and he was so totally broken up I could hardly understand him. But anyway, he happened to be in one of our seminars here last week and introduced himself, shared how the Lord had opened his heart because of the loss of his wife. She had left two crucial verses for him in their bathroom, which he found two or three days after the funeral. And through tears, he shared with me how then the next day he caught our program, and within one or two programs came to know the Lord. And nice-looking fellow, and you would never dream. And I just said, well, you know, why are you emphasizing how awful you've been? He said, Les, I've probably been in prison more than I've been out. And he certainly didn't look like that type of a person. But, you know, the Lord can save to the uttermost those that are willing to believe the gospel, and so it does. It encourages us as we see this across the ministry. Okay, we're going to pick up now. We left off in our study in Isaiah, and as I said at the beginning of the first program, we're not going to belabor the book. We're not going to stay in it from now on, but we will spend a little while because it is such an appropriate book for today, because it's a book of prophecy. And I'll keep repeating, because you remember, bear with me, we got new listeners coming in every day. Our database is just exploding lately. And so for the benefit of new listeners, I'm going to keep repeating. Isaiah is going to be prophesying near-term events because of their falling headlong into idolatry. Even though they've got the temple operating, it means nothing. And the rank and file of Israel have just become total rebels. And so a near-term judgment, such as an invasion by the Assyrians for the north. Now, while we were having coffee, I wrote a little bit of my makeshift map up here. Now, nothing is to scale, but it's almost a caricature so far as maps are concerned. But here we have the Euphrates River running all the way down through present-day Baghdad, down to the Persian Gulf. And here we have the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and the Dead Sea, Jerusalem right off the northern end of the Dead Sea, and slightly north of Jerusalem, the nation was divided. The 10 tribes comprising the northern kingdom, the 2 tribes of Judah and Benjamin are staying down here at the south, where, of course, they have the temple. Now, as Isaiah is writing, the near invasion by the Syrians of the 10 tribes is right at hand. It's going to happen within a matter of a few years. Then almost 100 years later, the Babylonians will come in from the east, and they will besiege Jerusalem, destroy the temple, and take the Jews back out to Babylon, which is present-day Iraq, remember, and they will be there for 70 years of captivity. Now, I always like to emphasize that contrary to the teaching of Armstrongism in years back, that the 10 tribes were lost and became Europeans and Americans. That is as false as a $3 bill. Because if you go back into the account of the Kings and the Chronicles and study the Civil War, and they did have civil war. The tribes of Judah would have civil war with Israel and back and forth. And if you will compare the wars from when they first started, Judah only had like a few hundred thousand men of war, whereas the 10 tribes had 1,300,000. 5 years later, the numbers have come a little closer to equal, but they're still leaning to this up here because they've got the 10 tribes. But then 30 years later, 30 years after the first civil war, Judah now has 1,000,000-some-hundred head of soldiers, and the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom have an army no bigger than a flock of kids, goats. That's the way the scripture puts it. So what has been happening over the years? They've been migrating back into Judah because, after all, that's where the temple is. That's where the major activities are. So when the Syrians come in and take Israel captive, there weren't that many left. And most of them have been down here. Now when they are taken captive out to Babylon, it figures how many tribes went into the Babylonian captivity? 2 or 12? Well, 12 of them. And when they came back, the language in Ezra and Nehemiah is all Israel. And by the time you get to Christ's first advent, and Peter addresses in Acts chapter 2, what is his application? Therefore, let the whole house of Israel. So don't ever buy into that fact that there are 10 lost tribes. They were never lost. They were always part and parcel of the nation of Israel. Okay, let's pick up where we left off in Isaiah then, chapter 1. Now verse 4. And just get the picture of how far down the tube the nation of Israel has gone just in the last 200 years since Solomon's death. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel into anger. They are gone away backward. Now, you remember in our last taping, I made the statement that nations as well as individuals are constantly given choices. The nation of Israel was choice after choice. Now let's go back so that you'll see what I'm talking about. Go back with me to the time of Moses, and as he writes the book of Deuteronomy, and turn to chapter 28. And this is just exactly what I'm trying to bring across in this study here in Isaiah. They had the choice. We Americans are in the same place. We're going to be making a tremendous choice. Are we just going to pull off all restraint? Are we just going to open the floodgates to wickedness? Or are we going to try and hold it back? Now, I've said everywhere I go, we can't turn it around. You will not turn it around because we're too close to the end. The best we can hope for is to slow it down. But, you know, like one fellow in Minnesota put it, and I think he's probably right on, he said, if it doesn't slow it down, then we're just that much closer to the rapture. Well, I'll have to agree, because we as a nation are at the same crossroads that Israel was, and here's the choice. Deuteronomy 28, and we can just start at verse 1. Now, this, of course, even before they have gotten into the promised land, and Moses is putting the choice before them. Verse 1, 28, and it shall come to pass. It's going to happen, however Israel chooses. And what's the next word? If. See, that's the condition. It'll come to pass if thou shalt hearken diligently to the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all the nations of the earth. That was Israel's prospect. You remember way back when they came out of Israel? I'm always teaching in Exodus 19. What could they have become? A nation of priests. Every Jew would have the opportunity to bring Gentiles to a knowledge of their God. But it was all based on whatever choice they would take. All right? Verse 2. All these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee if you make the right choice. And what's the choice? To listen to the voice of the Lord thy God. Then he begins to show the blessings that God is going to shower on the nation if they're obedient. Blessed shalt thou be in the city. Blessed shalt thou be in the field. Now, this is all in the normal events of everyday life. They'll be blessed family-wise. They'll be blessed in food production. They'll be blessed in every which way. Verse 4, blessed be the fruit of thy body, children, the fruit of thy ground, crops, the fruit of thy cattle, the increase of thy kind, and the flocks of thy sheep. In other words, like Abraham and Isaac of old, it would just come rolling in. See? That was one prospect. All right, but now let's come down to verse 15. What's the first word? But. Flip side. Here's the other choice. And it's a choice. But it shall come to pass if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes. Now remember, this is Israel under the law. This isn't you and I under grace. But the whole concept of choices is the same regardless. All right? And if you'll do all the commandments and his statutes which I command this day, that all these curses, all these bad things will come upon thee. And then here they listen. Cursed shalt thou be in the city, and cursed in the field. Cursed will be your basket and your store. Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body. You see how an awesome choice we've got here? Cursed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and cursed shalt thou be when thou goest out. The Lord shall send upon thee cursing, vexation, and rebuke. So if they choose wrong, is that God's fault? No, it's not God's fault. And the same way today. When people choose wrong and they end up in a life of drug addiction and sleeping under the bridge, is that God's fault? No, they made choices. All right, now jump back to Isaiah then, and I hope you got the picture. Israel now for 200 years has been choosing to rebel against the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and against the law of Moses. They're going their own way. They are falling under the influence of the pagan gods and goddesses of the Gentiles around them. All right? Back to Isaiah 1. Verse 5. Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. What's he talking about? Their thinking is all fouled up. Is it any different today? You know, we got an interesting letter from a grade school principal out east, yesterday's mail. And she attached a paper. She said, this is typical of the kids down in the upper elementaries. I'm thinking 6th, 7th grade. She said, this is typical of what we see every day. And it was just a blank sheet on which this kid had been doodling. I guess you all know what doodling is. And you know what the doodling was? Everything satanic. It was all satanic. The devil. Death. Death. Hell. That's kids. Their heads are sick. That's Israel. They're sick in the head. So far as spiritual things are concerned. All right? The head is sick. The heart is faint. Now, this isn't nice reading. I know it. It's a warning. And the whole thing is that if they respond to the warning, will the bad things happen? No. God will turn it into a blessing. But if they do not respond, judgment's going to fall. All right, let's read on. Verse 6, from the sole of the foot to the head That is just a figurative word of speech so far as the nation is concerned. From the foot to the head, there is no soundness. You don't do anything sensible. But wounds, bruises, putrefying sores, they have not been closed or bound up or mollified with ointment. The nation is sick, and it's getting sicker by the day. Verse 7, your country is desolate. Now remember, what was the promised land really called? The land of milk and honey. It was a tremendously productive area of the world. Beautiful. But what have they done with it? They have made God bring the curse upon it. And it's no longer beautiful and productive. All right, read on. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, now this hasn't happened yet, but it's going to, so it's spoken as if it's already done. I hope you catch that now. This is what's coming to the land of Israel, because the Syrians are already ready to march up into the northern kingdom. Old Nebuchadnezzar is sitting out there in Babylon, getting ready to increase his empire. And God knows that within 100 years, Jerusalem will be laying in ashes because of Nebuchadnezzar. All right? Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned. Your land, strangers, that is, the boots of invading armies, strangers devoured in your presence. It is desolate, overthrown by strangers. And the daughter of Zion is left. In other words, the people that are still in the land are like a cottage in a vineyard. In other words, what we would say, an abandoned shack. As a lodge in a garden of cucumbers that was no longer being used. You're like a besieged city. Now, we don't know what it's like to come under siege. But in antiquity, it got awful. You know that when Samaria was under siege, Jerusalem was under siege. No food comes in. They sooner or later run out of water. And they become destitute. And you know what happened. All right, now verse 9. Except, or unless, the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant. What's that? That little small percentage of faithful believers that God has always kept. And He's never had much more. In fact, that's a doctrine you can follow from almost the time of Cain and Abel all the way to the end of the book of Revelation. It's what I call the doctrine of the remnant. There's always that few. I had an interesting letter yesterday. If the rapture takes place today, will the world suddenly realize a catastrophe has happened with millions and millions and millions of people gone? I wish that were true. And I wrote back the answer this morning before I left. Don't you kid yourself. There's going to be so few believers raptured out of this world that they won't even miss us. It won't even cause a headline in the New York Times. Sad to say, but it's true, because that's the way it's always been. It's always that small, small remnant. All right, read on. So unless the Lord had kept the small remnant. Now we're talking about Israel, remember. Judah in particular, but Israel as a whole. We would have been a Sodom. If it hadn't been for the remnant of believers to hold things together, God would have just had to wipe the whole thing off the map. And we would have been like unto Gomorrah. Now verse 10. So hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Who is he referring to? Jerusalem. Jerusalem has become just about as bad as Sodom and Gomorrah. And don't you think for a minute that homosexuality didn't ravage Israel just like it does other nations. It did. And this was one of their problems. That's why it's referred to as such. Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, ye people of Gomorrah. It's still talking about Jerusalem. Now verse 11. Here really gets down where the rubber hits the road. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me? What did I tell you a little while ago? The temple is going full blast. They're killing animals by the hundreds in the name of religion. Oh, they're religious. But how much effect has it on their life? None. Any different today? Our churches are full. New ones going up every day. Is it changing the moral fiber of our country? I can't see it. And so what is it? It's just emptiness. Like Israel. All right, their sacrifices. I am full. In other words, how do we put it? I've had it up to here. I've had it with your sacrifices and your burnt offerings, the fat of the fed beasts. I delight not in the blood of bullocks or lambs or he-goats when it's not offered by faith. When you come to appear before me, who hath required this at your hand to tread my courts? Now, what do you suppose he meant by treading the courts? What's the other word? Trample. Trample. They had just like a mass of animals trampled the approaches to the temple. Now, let's give you a good vivid picture of what he was really talking about. Come back with me to Matthew 19. Isn't that where it was, Jerry? Come on, help me. Huh? Was it 21? Goodness, I just looked it up before the camera started rolling. Yeah, 21. I'm sorry. Yeah, 21, honey. Verse 12 and 13. Now you'll see exactly why I'm using the word trample back here in Isaiah. My, they were flooding to the temple. They were bringing their sacrifices. And what else was going on? Well, here we have it at the time of Christ. At the Lord's earthly ministry. Now in Matthew 21, verse 12. And Jesus went into the temple of God, there on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And he cast out all them that sold and bought, where? In the temple. Not a block or two down the street. They were doing all this within the confines of the temple compound. Now, they weren't in the Holy of Holies. They weren't in the sanctuary. That was just a little tiny building. But the whole complex made up what they called the temple, you see. All right, so he cast them all out and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. What were they doing? Well, they were selling the stuff that they needed for their sacrifices. Now, next verse. And he said unto them, it is written, my house, the temple, shall be called the house of prayer. But you, Israel, you have made it a den of thieves. And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed. All right, now why does he call these money changers thieves? Well, they were selling animals that were probably lame or not quite healthy, which weren't even acceptable for a sacrifice, but they were selling them for more bucks than they were worth. And they were thieving from the poor people who couldn't afford to go someplace else and buy something for a siren. They were trapped. And they took advantage of them. That's nothing new. My, we're full of it today. They're charlatans. They are pulling the money right out of people's pockets. And they don't even blink an eye. No shame, no guilt. And they think they're doing it for God's purpose. Well, I got news for them. It's not biblical. It's not scriptural. But this is what they're doing. They're thieving from the poor people that can't help themselves. Okay, back to Isaiah. Verse 13. Isaiah chapter 1. So he says, bring no more vain oblations, that is, things that were brought for sacrifice and worship. Incense is an abomination unto me. The new moons and the Sabbaths, which meant everything to a religious Jew. The new moons and the Sabbaths, the calling of assemblies. I cannot away with it. What's he saying in so many words? I can't handle it. I can't stand what you're doing. It is iniquity. Even your solemn meeting. What does that mean? Oh, they prayed. They bowed. They did everything that they thought their religion demanded. But where was their heart? As soon as they get out of there, they could go back out into the things of the world. Verse 14 again, your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hateth. They are a trouble unto me. I am weary to bear them. Well, now you know that the new moons and everything were a part and parcel of the Mosaic law. That isn't what God hated. What God hated was what they were doing with it. They were just making it a trumped up false religion and thought they were doing God a service. All right, now then, verse 15. This really gets close to home. And when you spread forth your hands, don't you see them? I will hide my eyes. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Now that's God speaking through the prophet. Your hands are full of blood. Now look, they weren't there with a bunch of actual blood all over them. It's a figure of speech. But if they had bloody hands, what did it show them? Their guilt. Their guilt. Maybe not just of actually murdering somebody, but they were so deep into sin and rebellion, it's as if they were no better than the murderer who has just walked away from killing someone. Now that's how serious it gets when unbelievers try to placate a holy God with their false approach, with their false worship and their ritual and their lifting up of their hands, and their heart is as far from God as it can possibly be. And you think God's going to stand for it? No more today than He did by here. Because we're going to see, probably not anymore this afternoon, but a little later in Isaiah, what happens? The enemies come in. And the Jews suffer immeasurably. But was it God's fault? No. He's warning them. And warning them. And warning them. But they will not listen.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.